Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, January 23rd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for the Tuesday edition of the show. Two guests joining me here today. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio. We'll chat with him about Super Bowl 52. He's also the host of Vegas Hockey Hotline, so we'll talk with him about the upcoming All-Star break, whether you should handicap the NHL a little bit differently here, and then, of course, coming out of that five-day layoff as well. Second half of today's show, we'll have Ed Feng from the Power Rank join us. He'll also talk Super Bowl 52 with us. Then we'll take a little bit of a look at tonight's college basketball card. Couple of marquee games out there. We'll discuss those with Ed. Before we get into that, make sure that you're heading on over to bangthebook.com and checking out all the great content that we have over there, including our free pick videos from today's first guest, Brian Blessing, but lots of helpful articles over there, ranging from the daily NHL free picks from Parker Michaels to Doug Carson's NBA picks on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I put up a Tuesday How to Bet article for tonight's Celtics versus Lakers game. We're going to have a ton of Super Bowl content. I'm going to start rolling that out here today. Put up the game preview. Also, the props coming out. Seems like they're coming out earlier than they have in the past. So I'll be writing my prop betting articles here this week as well. But we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information over at bangthebook.com. And while you're there, try out those contests that we have. Free to sign up. You'll win cash prizes in those. Just give us your email address. We'll shoot you a daily newsletter, and you'll be available to join those contests that we have going on over there. As I mentioned, two guests joining me here today on the program. The first, Mr. Brian Blessing from Sportsbook Radio. Brian, how's it going today?
Hey, Adam. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Good to hear your voice today. And I got to get something out of the way here real quick during our segment. I went up to Buffalo over the weekend, checked out the Sabres game, and my God, they played awful on Saturday. But I have to say, I went to Duff's. I went to Anchor Bar. I'm Team Duff's, man. I thought they were fantastic.
Yeah. Did you get a bocce?
I did not. We didn't make it there, unfortunately. I was so full eating wings at two different places in the same night. But I did go to Paula's, and their donuts are good.
Yeah, well, the one thing is beyond belief. And literally, I try to be a nice guy every day. But, I mean, I you know, dirty looks at everybody. I mean, you get chicken wings out here, they throw ranch dressing at you. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, you know, they're made, buffalo chicken wings are made to be eaten with blue cheese.
No, I completely agree. And for those that have no idea what we're talking about, Brian, a longtime Buffalonian, I went up there last weekend, as I've said on the show before, became a Sabres fan in high school, so got a chance to go up there to the game and, you know, had to get wings while I was there. And
did you park at the Swanee House? Get a
beef
and wedge sandwich?
No, I didn't.
You got to go back.
I know. Well, that's fine. I'm always happy to have an excuse to go back up there. Hopefully when I go, the Sabres play a little bit better. But, you know, for those that haven't had beef on Weck, beef on Weck is fantastic.
Oh, beef on Weck's amazing. That or play Dallas on the puck line. I mean,
that's true.
You know, I mean, you know, that was a cupcake. Although, give the Sabres credit last night, their personal pride after the, and maybe that's a little lesson for the podcast here, is, you know, when a team has one of the most god-awful performances and they get booed off the ice and the coach calls them out and they get put through the ringer, even though they've hit the bottom of the barrel, these guys are professional athletes. They are playing for jobs and pride. Their next game, they went into Calgary last night and beat a red-hot Flames team in overtime. Eichel scored in overtime. So as bad as they looked last night, they were a big plus price, and you made money on them last night.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that was the one, the big takeaway that I had. And I've actually seen Dallas twice. When I was out in Vegas, I just happened to see Dallas there as well. And, I mean, they're just a really good team, especially with all that talent that they have up front. But, you know, for Buffalo, like you said, I mean, kudos to them for rallying. I mean, that was a really depressing performance on Saturday. As you mentioned, booed off the ice after the second period. The stands were basically empty in the third period. But, you know, they did step up and played a really good team. And, you know, sometimes it helps, too, to get out on the road, get away from the local media, kind of get away from, you know, family and all that. You're just with your teammates. And I think that's a really key lesson here as well.
Yeah, and who they're not getting away for are the scouts. I mean, scouts have been, you know, I monitor this every night, you know, in the press box, and certain teams have been following, specifically the Sabres, for a long time. Evander Kane's name has been out there to be a very valuable asset. It'll be available trade deadline. But now it's going to be a fire sale. So the scouts know this, and I do believe this, Adam. I think this trades will happen by the end of this week. We wait till the trade deadline, and you sit there, and sometimes it becomes this quiet day. You think all these things are going to happen. And in recent years, the bigger deals have actually been cut in advance of the trade deadline. The bottom line is you look at the standings, and the logjam of really, really good teams in the West is there. And in the East, there are teams that are kind of plodding along, but it's still this compacted schedule coming up, and it's a logjam in the standings. Some of these teams, Chicago's got to get a goaltender. And then there are teams that have injuries. Their season is in peril at the moment, and teams wait for the trade deadline. It's going to be too late. I think there's going to be some movement. I think and when one trade starts, it's going to open the floodgates, and I do believe it's going to start this week.
No, and that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I've never fully understood why teams wait until right up against the trade deadline, because why wouldn't you want those assets for, you know, 6, 8, 10 more games in the month of February? Why wait until February 26th when, you know, then you may be paying a little bit lower of a price because you've got the player for a shorter amount of time, or you may be paying a higher price because there's more competition out there. Yeah. And I would hit the market early. I don't know why more teams don't.
Well, for all the reasons you cited, and another one would be you give them more time to get acclimated to know their teammates so that anything they're doing when the postseason gets here becomes second nature, and you lengthen out the transition period to become a good teammate.
No, that's true, too. And also, I mean, it's really hard to make up ground in the NHL. With that loser point for going to overtime, it's so hard to make up ground. So, again, I mean, I think it really behooves teams to be a little bit more aggressive here. And I agree. There's been a lot of smoke over the last few days in terms of on Twitter with guys that are available. I think you're right. I think things do start happening here over the All-Star break, which I guess since we're talking NHL, we might as well just go ahead and do it. We'll finish up with the Super Bowl here, is that, Brian, as you handicap this week, and it is a little bit of a condensed schedule, as you mentioned, several teams playing 3 games in 4 days here, wrapping up on Thursday and then going to the All-Star break on Friday. Do you feel like you should handicap this week differently because there's that downtime that players are looking forward to?
I would think it'd be maybe more after the break, where we see teams get a little rusty after a break. But basically, we just did this. I mean, they've all basically just come off their collectively bargained 5-game bye, and teams had an element of rust coming off the bye. The one thing the league that did that was better than past years, for the most part, you had teams were coming off a bye, were playing another team that came off a bye. So that they did a better job of that, because last year teams coming off the bye were 9-21. It's awful. You get the rust, bad habits creep in, and especially teams that are playing really, really good, the last thing they want to do is take a break. So I'd maybe watch for teams that have, you know, Colorado's been great. Calgary's been great. I would look at maybe after the All-Star break, you know, look for maybe teams like that. Not that they're going to fall off the map, but I would look for them to come back to earth, teams like Colorado and Calgary.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because as you said, you know, you start playing well, you get into that rhythm, you want to keep playing. You don't want to take that time off, especially if Calgary winds up running this winning streak up to 12 before the All-Star break. You know that they don't want to stop, and then you kind of sit there. It's a little bit harder to relax during that 5-day period because you're sitting there thinking, okay, when we get back, you know, we got a 12-game winning streak to try and keep up. So, you know, not necessarily an ideal spot for Colorado. And of course, you know, they may lose one of these next 2 games anyway. But, you know, do you feel like there's a team out there maybe that could use the All-Star break to its advantage, either get healthier or, you know, maybe get back on track after struggling a little bit?
Well, personally, I keep staring at Anaheim, and I think that this is a team. They're sitting there 22-17-9, but they're on the outside looking in. But I look towards the playoffs and who are teams that are constructed to be successful in the postseason. Anaheim strikes me always as that team. Now, the game is really a speed game. You know, and Anaheim is not the fastest team. We watched Vegas play them. They skated rings around them. The difference is when you get to this time of year, and especially when you get to the playoffs, things just get ratcheted down. Teams start playing a real close-to-the-vest kind of game. They chip it off the glass and out, and they're more of a counter-punching team, and they'll go – the mantra in the playoffs is, you know, special teams and goaltending. Gibson's a good goaltender. Kessel, who's a great lockdown center. And then you get guys like Getzloff that can raise his game. I think Anaheim as a team's going to have to make a deal or two. The one thing that makes them really dangerous for me is this is a team that can generate offense from the blue line. You know, a lot of teams have a guy that can, you know, be that offensive threat from the blue line. Anaheim's got a little mini army of guys that can jump in the play and create offense.
Well, and if you look over at the Eastern Conference here, the Atlantic Division, I mean, those three playoff spots are pretty much decided. Tampa Bay, Boston, Toronto. Detroit's 12 points out. They do have three games in hand on Toronto, but they're not going to run down the Maple Leafs, I don't think. Although Toronto's having some offensive issues here lately. The Metropolitan Division, though, is, you know, you got Washington up there with 61 points. They're in good shape. Then the rest of the teams in that division separated by a total of 6 points, New Jersey in second, Carolina last with 50. You know, what do you think happens in the Metropolitan Division here? I mean, do you feel like there's a team that, you know, in that sort of mid-range that can start to separate a little bit? Or do you feel like this is pretty much, you know, what we'll see going forward where there's just not a whole lot of separation in the standings?
I think specifically that division, it's just like cannibalization. They'll just sit there and eat each other alive. At the moment, you got Pittsburgh tied with the Rangers, but through tiebreakers are the ninth seed right now. I think Pittsburgh is a team that's capable of making maybe a moderately significant deal. They're loaded with prospects in Wilkes-Barre. And I think we're seeing it with Chicago now. Chicago is, you know, you've got Kane and Taves, but collectively the supporting cast is getting long in the tooth, and they're slow. And I think playing all that hockey takes its toll on you. And, you know, we're seeing Pittsburgh right now. They've been playing, making Stanley Cup runs the last 2 years. It takes a toll. That being said, you got young guys like Getzel and Sheary. These kids are young, and they'll be okay. But I think look for Rutherford to make a deal for Pittsburgh here to give them a little mini wake-up call. And don't forget, I mean, in past years, you know, the guys that were monsters for them when they won the Cup a couple years ago, they went and they got Hagelin. And the third line was the key for them to win the Cup. Hagelin was one of the fastest guys in the league. Last year, Bonino was one of the biggest contributors. So it's not always this, you know, a high-end blockbuster deal. It's the second, third, and fourth line. Well, I wouldn't go to a fourth line, but second and third line guys that can chip in offensively, those are the deals that put teams over the top. So I'd really look for Pittsburgh to be making a move here of significance.
All right, let's spend a couple of minutes on Vegas. And I listened to you with Eric Lacroix yesterday on Vegas Hockey Hotline, and it was fascinating to me that you're somebody that covers this team day in and day out, and yet you're still kind of rendered speechless 46 games into the season at what they're doing. I mean, they're just a point away from having the top record in the NHL. They have a game in hand on Tampa Bay, so it could happen tonight when they host Columbus. But this is a really interesting 3 or 4 week stretch for Vegas. You've got the All-Star break where they get a chance to sort of, you know, realize what they're doing, kind of let it all sink in a little bit. They've got some interesting situations with guys on one-year deals. They've been giving out some extensions. This is just a really fascinating week for them, not just in terms of the playoff chase, but for the future of this franchise. So what are you getting from them overall? I mean, do you feel like they're going to slow down with so much going on, or is it just going to be business as usual on the ice?
I don't think they slow down. We'll put it this way. I mean, they're not getting 60 points in the second half of the season the way they did in the first half. I mean, so I guess technically if it was slowing down, I think this is a really, really good hockey team. We've talked in previous podcasts here some of the reasons why. It's like a perfect storm. You have 13 guys that were unrestricted or restricted free agents. So these guys are all in a contract year. Gallant's been able to mesh them together. There's a real true bond and a sense of camaraderie in the locker room. They're all really good guys. Every night they play, well, tonight, they're playing Columbus tonight. So this will be the first time, but every time they go to play an opponent, they actually get a scouting report in the room. Tonight, William Karlsson sits there going against his old team. So he gives them little scouting reports and little tricks and things that this guy does, that guy does, and then they rally around and play for Karlsson his first time going against Columbus. It's just all these wild things that have just added up. And the fact that they're all, and it's not an insult to them, they're all playing some of the best hockey of their careers. I don't know if they're overachieving, but they're all playing as a highly motivated bunch. But they are lightning, and they are fast. at them. I mean, they are one of the fastest teams in the league, and the true the one thing on a nightly basis you watch, and I think you know, we were talking with Eric about this yesterday, is in a tie game with 3 minutes to go, Gerard Gallant comfortably will put the fourth line on the ice. And there are times the fourth line carries play against the other team's best player. So they get fresh players. They roll four lines. They're fresh even late in games. I could go on and on reasons why. It's an amazing thing. I mean, people, oh, well, the league made it so that they could, cherry pick these guys. Well, these guys weren't doing any of this stuff with these other teams. William Karlsson had 18 career goals in three seasons. He's got 25 this year before the All-Star game that he should be playing in. I mean, how do you handicap that?
No, you can't. And one of the things I've noticed about Vegas, in the game where I saw them, I mean, they played Dallas, and Dallas wound up winning that game. I think it was 3-0. But the thing about Vegas is that they outworked the opposition damn near every night. And that's something that Columbus used to do with John Tortorella. You know, now they've gotten to a point where I don't want to say they're fat and happy necessarily, but now that they've actually started to accomplish something, you know, that work ethic element hasn't fully been there for this team. But I really liked what John Tortorella did. You know, with the team looking at its first trip going out to Vegas, he said, I want the players to go and have fun. We're going to go out there early. I want them to go out. I want them to play a little bit guilty on Tuesday night. I think that's the right way to approach it, quite frankly. And I think tonight should be a real good one.
Oh, no, it should be a good game. And the other thing, there are a lot of angles that make sense. First game home from a long road trip is a tough game to play. So it's the first game home for a four-game Eastern swing for Vegas. They went 2-1-1. And I like that approach by Tortorella. Try something different. Lamorello locked the Leafs in a door, locked them in a room. That didn't work. Some teams came in for 3-4 days. We don't know, did any of these guys go haywire? Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. The bottom line is you got to show up and you got to play the game. And I would just say to you that all the things that make sense and angles that have worked forever and a day in hockey, you happen to be at one of the four games. They're 18-2-2 at home. That Dallas game, by the way, Dallas had their dad betting angle in the history of sports. That's when a hockey team has their dads on a trip with them. These guys play like men possessed. So it was one of the few nights Vegas had a bad game. The other team was playing it like a playoff game, the Dallas Stars, because their dads were on the trip. So I mean, there's always an angle, man. There's always an angle.
Yeah, there really is. And I think hockey, maybe more so than any other sport, sort of lends itself to those types of things. When you talk about the nature of the schedule, the dad's trip, playing against former opponents, coaches going up against their former teams. I mean, we've seen it with Vegas, especially the game when Florida came to town. They were fired up for that one for Gerard Gallant. You certainly couldn't blame them for that. So lots of those little angles that maybe aren't necessarily quantifiable, but are definitely things that you want to use in your handicap in the NHL. Right, let's transition over to Super Bowl 52 here for a few minutes. New England, a 5-point favorite out there, pretty much market-wide, at least in terms of the offshores. Pinnacle and the Greek still sitting 5.5. There were some 5.5s out there yesterday at some of the other books, but most of those kind of gone now at this point. Is this thing setting up as sort of a pros versus Joes type of game?
Well, and there's so much money bet on it. The general public gets involved so much more in this game. The one thing you got, it's sitting now in a dead zone. When you're at 5, 5.5, you're going to watch different properties. This thing go up and down, up and down, up and down. Then you have other places that have liability on the future book that may shade a number. So you're actually going to be able to, shop around a little bit here to determine what the best number is, that depending on the side you like in the game. Personally, when you get to 400 props in a game, I would say that, unless you have this monster opinion on the game, the way to go is the props. And I will say this, fortunately, it worked this past weekend in the Jags game. I had real doubts. I like Jacksonville. I know Brady's been getting hit a lot more than he has in the past. So I wasn't in love. I thought the number was inflated. But when I looked at the game, my handicap for the game, and it was the way I played the game, was we know Belichick always takes the opposition's best player away. So it's good to reason he was going to try and stop Fournette. The Bills stopped Fournette, and the Jags were lucky to beat them. So you're saying, well, if he's taking Fournette away, that means they're going to have to go to a controlled little short passing game to actually move the ball with the running game, with little swing passes, and Bortles was going to have to throw. So the way I played the game was Bortles over 19 completions and over 223.5 passing yards. And it was actually my handicap of the game. That was my opinion on the game, more than the game and the score or the side or the total in the game. You get a bad bounce of the ball, now that game's going to go over the total. All of a sudden, Miles Jack comes up, makes a great play, and forces the fumble, so the game stays under the total. But then there are moments in the game. We're watching the game. I do a thing out at Sunset Station with our buddy Andy Isco. We're sitting next to each other, and it was about 2 minutes to go before it happened. I said, Andy, the time is now. If you're going to do it, and it's amazing how the industry's changed where you think of in-game wagering. I said, they were down four at the half, so they were down 11 at the time, and they were getting the ball back before the half. I said, the time is now to play New England on the money line, because that ship is going to sail. The time is now. And sure enough, they went down the field and got a touchdown before halftime, but you were getting like plus $1.65 or whatever for the Patriots to win the game. But it was now you got to think about in-game wagering and your handicapping as the game goes along too.
Yeah, and then there should be a lot of that for the Super Bowl, especially because of what we saw in last year's Super Bowl and how many opportunities there were, to take the Patriots for that comeback, or if you wanted to take the Falcons side thinking that the game was pretty much done, you had opportunities like that too. But I really love what you were talking about there with Jacksonville and with the Blake Bortles props, because, I mean, this was a 24-20 game. There were no ridiculous yardage totals or anything like that. But as you said, New England's probably going to take Leonard Fournette away. For the most part, they did. 3.2 yards per carry, did have a touchdown, but his longest carry, 14 yards on the day. So for Jacksonville, it was about Blake Bortles. And you see Corey Grant, 3 catches for 59 yards out of the backfield. A lot of dump-offs, as you mentioned. That's my favorite thing about the Super Bowl, is trying to figure out how these coordinators are going to play it. And a lot of times when you get to a Super Bowl, you've got teams that are loaded with skill position talent, so you have a lot of opportunities to look around for prop betting values. And I completely agree. That's definitely the way to go.
But this game, that one, instantly, I will tell you, instantly, after Jacksonville beat Pittsburgh, that was my thought process for the next game. I'm looking at this. I'm going to need every minute leading up to this game. You look at Philadelphia, you got 2 weeks for Belichick to prepare for Foles. So he's going to try to do something. He'll do something to disguise and mask and frustrate Foles. But when you look at Philadelphia, I don't know what is their best thing. 1 week it's Aguilar, 1 week it's Ertz. It could be a Jai. It could be Blunt. It's like an offense by committee. It becomes a real challenge to sit there and say, what is Belichick actually going to take away from the Eagles? I don't know that there's any one thing.
No, that makes sense. And what's also interesting here about this game is that you've got this Philadelphia front four that gets a lot of pressure on its own. They don't have to do a lot of exotic blitzes or anything like that. So they've got a lot of those guys back there in coverage in the back seven. That's something that kind of limits what New England does really well in terms of finding Gronk up the seam, assuming he's cleared to play, and he probably should be. But also the way that they use their running backs in the passing game. So it kind of makes you wonder, what Josh McDaniels is going to come up with as well.
From a prop perspective, this one is really kind of a Rubik's Cube because, 1 week to the next. Here's the thing, that when Gronkowski's in the game, he is a red zone machine, and he's a mismatch nightmare for New England, which then opens the door for the underneath stuff, be it Amendola. Other than that, without Gronkowski, they have diminutive wide receivers. It was pretty impressive that once Gronkowski was out of that game, New England was still able to get enough points to get it in the end zone enough. Once Gronkowski was out, because they are seriously a completely different offense when Gronkowski's not in there.
Now, let me ask you this here about the actual spread for the full game with New England favored by 5. A lot of the look ahead lines had this game 6.5 or 7. So, right now you're kind of protecting against the Gronkowski injury. Like I said, I think he's probably going to play. I mean, it'd be really hard to see him, sitting out here, whatever New England has to do, whether it's on the up and up or not. Gronkowski's probably going to find a way to be out there in this game. But you had New England struggle with Jacksonville, and you could make a case that if Jacksonville doesn't get overly conservative in the fourth quarter, we're talking about Philadelphia versus Jacksonville here. But you had Philadelphia, who played extremely well against Minnesota, 38-7, almost wire-to-wire job in that one for them. So Philadelphia looked good. New England really didn't. We go from a 6.5 or 7 look-ahead line to the 5, 5.5 that we're seeing out there now. Is that justified, or do you think that we're seeing a little bit of an overreaction to last weekend's action?
Well, it's a been there, done that thing. I mean, you know, it's just New England in the Super Bowl again. They know the routine. They're comfortable. Philly did. It was amazing what Philly did. I mean, they made Minnesota look bad. But don't forget, it was a home game. And, you know, so now it's a neutral field, albeit the majority of the crowd likely will be rooting for Philadelphia. By the way, I mean, you talk about one that falls through the cracks. You know, I did not see this one. And like I said, I'll be doing videos for Bang the Book, and we'll break down a lot of the props and a lot of the things leading up to it. But as much as you try to, you know, and this is one that was a simple one. I'm hitting guys that are sitting at the table I'm at. But look at this. They threw the graphic out to your lives that indoor teams, they put it up at the time, was 0-12. Now it's 0-13. Indoor teams playing outside in the championship game are now 0-13. Like, I wish I knew that before the game.
Wow. Yeah, I there's no way I would have thought it would be that lopsided. But, I mean, I guess
0-13 now. Indoor teams, mark it down, write it down for the rest of your life. Indoor teams playing outdoors in a conference championship game are 0-13.
That is crazy. It is absolutely crazy. Now, let me ask you this then. In terms of looking at this game here, which will be played indoors, and obviously Minnesota would have been the home team had they beaten Philadelphia, do you feel like that indoor environment favors one of these two teams? A lot of times people like to talk about the fast track. You know, you don't have to worry about your footing as much. Do you feel like that favors one of these two sides here or not really?
Well, I mean, we put it this way. It takes weather out of the equation. So whatever you're thinking in terms of pace of play, you're taking a huge factor out of it. So, you know, I think the other thing you do is you break down games. You remember the big comeback last year with New England against Atlanta. These teams make adjustments at halftime. You know, in the beginning of the game, even New England will have jitters and nerves. It seems like the second half of these games, whatever adjustments they make, lend themselves to seeing more offense. And then, like you said, it was crazy. And I know it's human nature, but coaches drive me nuts in football. I mean, the way they burn timeouts and just throw them away. But literally, you're sitting there at the end of almost towards the tail end of the third quarter, and you could see Jacksonville starting to play the clock and getting conservative. And you're like, you know, don't change anything. You're throttling the guy. Keep knocking him on the seat of his pants. Don't go to this thing. Go, well, it took him 6 minutes to score. Well, don't change anything. They wouldn't have scored. But when you were watching it, you're sitting there going, you're just playing with fire. I mean, Jack, you got a 6-point lead. It's not enough. I mean, you've got to go score again. And you want to keep giving the ball back to Brady. I mean, you know, basically you're going to get what you deserve.
No, yeah, completely, and especially with the way that they handled that last possession right before halftime. They take a knee with 55 seconds left and a couple of timeouts, and you're just sitting there thinking to yourself, you cannot do that against New England. If you can put up three or at least move the football a little bit, you know, give yourself some confidence for the second half or whatever, you've got to do it. You just, I mean, it was almost like they were waving the flag way too early there in that situation, and obviously New England does what they do. Tom Brady does what he does. Now we're talking about New England back in the Super Bowl. Let me ask you one more thing here, Brian, and then I'll let you go for today. Sportsbook Radio, you talk to a lot of sportsbook directors. It feels to me like the entire catalog of props is coming out a little bit earlier here this year than I recall in years past.
Well, I would say maybe for a couple of reasons. Many of them that are coming out are just the tried and true. Will there be a team that scores three consecutive times, you know, will there be a score in the final 2 minutes and a half? I mean, the generic ones are what they are. Some places have had those up forever. I would say that many of the guys may have actually cheated during the week, and I know this has happened in the past because it is such a daunting task for these guys to get all this stuff up that they probably flat out went and started and did all, you know, the majority of their Patriots props and had the lion's share of those done. And if you wanted to sit there and say there wasn't a great difference between Philly's defense and Minnesota's defense, And they were probably already working on individual player props for the Patriots because they were 7.5-point favorites in the game. So they probably got a running head start on a lot of this stuff just on the premise that New England would be in the game. That might be one of the reasons why.
Yeah, it makes a whole lot of sense. I'm sure that you'll talk with those people on Sportsbook Radio here throughout the week. And then also you do a great job with Vegas Hockey Hotline. How can people tune in for those programs?
Yep, AM 1400 KSHP. Shows are archived at sportsbookradio.com. And it's a wild couple of weeks for us. The next two Thursdays we'll be out at Sunset Station doing the shows with Chuck Esposito. And then this Friday is our annual prop show over at the Superbook where Jay Cornegay does an amazing job. We'll be there doing 2 hours of props. All the props come out Thursday night. Friday morning we'll talk about the line moves on the props and really dive into them. And then the following Friday we'll be back at the Superbook. And that'll be a lot of fun. Former Mayor Oscar Goodman's coming by with the Showgirls, which doesn't mean a lot because it's radio. At least I get to look at the Showgirls. It'd be a fun couple of weeks. It's funny. Yesterday I said at the beginning of the show, all right, instead of saying, hey, here's the start of a new week, it's the start of 2 weeks because it bleeds together. And the reality of it is by the time we get to next Wednesday or Thursday, you're just going, please play the game. I'm sick of talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, all the same angles being talked about here for basically 9 straight days on Bang the Book Radio. But make sure you're heading over to bangthebook.com, checking out Brian's videos that he does for us, and also following him on Twitter at Brian Blessing. Brian, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us, buddy, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, Adam. Next time, get a Bocce's pizza, buddy.
There you go. There's Brian Blessing of Sportsbook Radio. And look, man, I wanted to get pizza, but I was so full from eating wings at two different places. And, you know, I think my problem is that I got fries as well at Duff's. And, you know, you're just kind of taking up important stomach space there when it comes to leaving room for the things that you really want to go out there and get. Any event, before we bring Ed Fang onto the show, just to remind our listeners about that promo code over at DSI Sportsbook, BTV, and the number 25. Get you a $25 free bet just for signing up. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. Keep in mind that you want as many outs as possible when it comes to the Super Bowl and the prop betting market. Some sportsbooks are going to be off by a few yards. You're going to have different juice at every sportsbook. So head on over to bangthebook.com, check out our sportsbook reviews, see which one of those offshores works for you. And obviously, if you're out there in Las Vegas, use those apps to your advantage, see what the different lines are. You know, head out, go down to the brick and mortars, check out what they have available, and listen to Brian's show as well, because I'm sure he'll be talking about a lot of those things with those different sportsbook directors. One more guest here on this Tuesday edition of the show, that is Ed Fang from the Power Rank. Ed, how's it going today, man?
It's great. How are you doing, Ed?
I'm doing very well. Appreciate your time here on this Tuesday morning show. And let's go ahead and start things off by talking about Super Bowl 52. As I mentioned in that previous segment there with Brian, a lot of the 5.5s in the offshore market have gone down to 5. Not a particularly significant move with a number like this, but I think we're starting to get a little bit of an indication here on what the sharper side may be in this game.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm kind of on the other side here. I feel like it's a little bit – we were discussing what the line should be. Watching Philadelphia just roll over Minnesota. And I kind of threw out a number of 7. And we've seen, you know, the model go away. We've seen the markets go away from that number. And, you know, this just strikes me as an overreaction to two great games that Nick Foles has had. He's played incredible. And I guess, you know, the markets didn't really move. I mean, it seemed like my number compared to the market has been a 5-point adjustment with Philly's kind of full season numbers. So the adjustment to Nick Foles was about 5 points each of the last 2 weeks. And I feel like everyone's completely forgotten about that because now all of a sudden we have a situation in which it's a lot less. We kind of expect Nick Foles to go into the Super Bowl and continue what he's doing. I have my doubts about whether that is going to happen. We saw Cam Newton have 2 incredible playoff games a couple years ago. And I feel like it's a lot of the same situation. Then he went into the Super Bowl against Denver, really struggled. Now Denver's defense is much better than what New England's going to put out there. But I also think Cam Newton's a lot better than Nick Foles. So, yeah, I've been hearing a lot of stuff about the sharp side being Philadelphia, and I'm not sure I agree with that.
Yeah, I'm not really sure either. I mean, I was kind of talking with my boss yesterday, and I sort of expected this number to kind of climb back up to where the look-ahead lines were, because you mentioned you thought 7
right.
would be a number that you were kind of looking at. The look-ahead lines were 6.5 and 7 out there, depending on where you look. And, you know, I mean, yeah, New England didn't play all that well against Jacksonville, and like I just mentioned in that previous segment, if Jacksonville doesn't go conservative in the fourth quarter, we're probably talking about the Jaguars being in the Super Bowl. But they ran on every first down.
Yeah.
Threw a bunch of deep shots on second down for no good reason, and Warren Sharp's done a fantastic job breaking that down on his Twitter account, at Sharp Football. And, again, it's one of those things where I don't know why coaches do this year after year after year. So you could say that New England maybe got a little bit fortunate, and to be fair, Tom Brady made plays in the fourth quarter, and Tom Brady always
did.
Does
he
that.
He so did.
Yeah, and Philadelphia won 38-7 in a game where they were a three-point dog. So – there does right. seem to be a bit of an overreaction here, which is interesting to me because I have to think that the books know they're getting a lot of New England public money. I feel like from a Sharp standpoint, I think they may be a little bit more split than what this line is suggesting.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely think so. I expect this line to go up. I mean, just by the time we get to next Saturday, Sunday morning, I think it's going to go up. And it's kind of a weird thing, you know. I mean, if usually New England is going to get the benefit of the doubt in this kind of game. But just with the situation of you know, struggling to beat Jacksonville and the way Philly played, it's kind of the exact opposite. I mean, maybe a little bit similar to, you know, the Alabama-Georgia national championship game where the kind of the Goliath of the league is kind of limping. I don't even want to say limping, but, you know, haven't necessarily played their best football in recent games. And we're seeing the markets account for that in a pretty dramatic way.
Well, and I think another thing too, that, you know, we haven't talked about yet, and I'm kind of surprised we haven't, because we've had, you know, 2 days here worth of Super Bowl analysis on the show. And we'll have a ton of it as we continue to go forward, specifically looking at props here later in the week and next week. But Philadelphia was catching, you know, 3.5 on the opener to Minnesota at home in the playoffs. You figure that's a full 3 at least worth of home field advantage. So on a neutral, Minnesota -6-ish, minus, you know, 6.5,
yeah,
something like that. Same thing with Atlanta in the divisional
yep.
round. Why is New England only laying 5? Because New England is better than those two teams as far as I'm concerned.
I hear you, man. You're making my argument for me. And, you know, I mean, I think this is even more apparent in the total. I think the total is 48 right now. My numbers put it at about 49.5. Obviously, very good offense with New England. Good defense with Philly, but you expect Brady to get it done, especially if he has Gronk back. And, you know, we discussed kind of on a 5-point adjustment for Carson Wentz to Nick Foles. So we're seeing a lot of optimism for this Philly offense, and I kind of get it just the way that Foles has really played the last 2 weeks. I mean, he's been fantastic. I mean, you can't say enough about what he did against a very, very good Minnesota defense. But, you know, I mean, we always, the Super Bowl is about the most public of public games as far as the sports betting markets go, and I think we're seeing a lot of effects there.
I just, you know, everything I think about in terms of digging into this line, I just have a harder time figuring it out. I mean, like you said, I thought the 6.5-7 was a pretty good number, and I don't want to read too much into what I saw in the conference championship round. I mean, you know, for New England, obviously they did struggle with Jacksonville, and New England has, you know, struggled a little bit in some of their bigger playoff games here. I mean, let's keep in mind, yeah, they won 34-28 last year, but they were down 28-3, as everybody you know, knows full well now. And I apologize for Falcons fans that are listening here that have to relive this whole thing here over the next 2 weeks. But it's not like they played well early in that game. Atlanta got conservative,
right,
let them back in the game, you know, and then they're inexplicably throwing when they should be running, you know, late in the fourth quarter. You know, Jacksonville let New England win that game pretty much. If Jacksonville keeps going, keeps putting that gas pedal down on the floor, we are talking about a different type of Super Bowl matchup here, I think. So I get that. I get sort of the pessimism about New England in that regard. But like you said, there seems to be a significant amount of optimism for this Philadelphia team, for Nick Foles. And that sort of segues into the next point that I want to talk about here, is that we've got 2 weeks now. So you've got New England with the chance to get Rob Gronkowski as healthy as possible. You've got Philadelphia
yep.
with the chance to work some more things in for Nick Foles. But the fact that Philadelphia systematically dismantled Minnesota last week, gives high marks to Doug Peterson, to Frank Reich, to John DeFilippo, to Jim Schwartz. I wonder how big New England's coaching advantage actually is in this Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to give the edge to Belichick in this. I mean, all due respect to Peterson, I mean, he's done fantastic this year, bringing along a second-year quarterback, making him look like a future Hall of Famer. I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. But Belichick has gotten it done for a long, long time. I kind of believe in him, and we know that he's willing to stretch the interpretation of every rule as well. And I still I'm gonna side with the New England coaching staff in this matchup.
All right, so let me ask you about this. You're largely a numbers-based guy. I mean, it's not to say that you don't incorporate, situational handicapping and some of the intangible things into what you come up with and your thoughts on a game. But from the numbers standpoint, you mentioned that you think that New England, I mean, was that like a raw number for you of 7, or was that, taking into consideration as well that New England's been here, done that, that they're going to be the public side here, which generally tends to be a little bit shaded. But what's a raw number look like for you on this game?
Yeah. So I threw out the number of 7, and then what I did after the game was I tried to use the markets to figure out what they would project forward. So I took I basically eliminated all the games with Carson Wentz from Philadelphia, and I took 4 games. So the 2 in the regular season that Nick Foles started against the Giants in Oakland. I threw out the last week against Dallas because they weren't playing for anything, and I think the markets reflected that. And then I put in the 2 playoff games as well. So you kind of have 4 games in which you can kind of get a market-based adjustment. New England, all the data is in there. And for most every other team, all the data is in there from the markets. I run that through my algorithm to kind of adjust for strength of schedule and to project forward what the market should say about the Super Bowl. And it comes out to 7, 6.8. And that's kind of what I guessed before and pretty happy. That's kind of what I thought the market would be. And that's why I'm really, I'm intrigued by this kind of 2-point jump down to 5 and really staying there for a couple of days now. It fascinates me.
And this is such a unique element and such a unique game because, it's almost like the bowl games in that the lines are just sitting out there forever. And you kind of get waves of action. You'll get that initial movement. If people think there's value on that opening line, then it'll kind of sit there. Maybe you get some adjustments for suspensions or injuries or coaching changes, coordinator changes in college, what have you. Here, though, you have this unique element where this line sits up here for basically 2 full weeks. And obviously we had to look ahead lines that you could consider beforehand as well. You get a little bit of initial market movement. You'll kind of see something here, I think, the middle of the week. And then you sort of see moves coincide with when limits are increased. Once we get to game week, limits will go up. Limits will go up again middle of the week. And then by the time we get to kickoff, books are going to be taking obscene amounts of money on this game. So what's really challenging about an element like this is that this line sits out here. Shows like mine, I know you do a podcast, mainstream media, everybody's talking about every single element of the Super Bowl. By the time you get to the actual game itself, it's almost paralysis by overanalysis because you've considered every possible factor. So that's something that's really challenging, I think, about the Super Bowl is that if you don't like a position early on, if you feel like there's not something that you've found right out of the gates, then you may start to nitpick a little bit or sort of be influenced by one thing that's something of an outlier. And that's what's challenging here about this game is that we have 4 data points for Nick Foles. We have, 14 seasons for Tom Brady. So I feel like there's a little bit of an unknown element on the Philadelphia side, and I don't really know how to quantify that and how to factor that in, not just for the side and total on this game, but then obviously for the props, which we'll talk a little bit more about here in a second.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I talked to Cade Massey, who runs Massey Peabody. I think this was before Philadelphia and Atlanta. And he was talking about, we have a model. We try to do some stuff with quarterbacks, and we have a number for every quarterback in the league. And, we take Carson Wentz's number and subtract Nick Foles' number, and we get an adjustment. And after he said that, it was really interesting because he said, I don't really trust the number. So I'm not even going to give you my prediction for that. And I think that just goes to show you, even with all the data that we have, the NFL is a lot easier than college. You have no prayer making a quantitative adjustment for a backup freshman quarterback in college football. You're just going with what you see or what you know and anything else you have. In the NFL, we can do a little bit better, but even the experts out there that try to do this, don't necessarily trust the number. And, yeah, I mean, I think that's where we're seeing this market going, because we've seen Nick Foles and he's been good, and that's pushing this thing towards Philly.
All right, so let's talk about it from a prop standpoint then, and I know that as you and I were talking before the show, you haven't dug too much into the prop market here as of yet, and I'm sure you'll do that as we get closer to the game. It can be a little bit of an uncomfortable situation for, you know, somebody like you that relies a lot on the numbers, on the data, because you kind of have to do some guessing. You kind of have to put yourself in the mind of the offensive coordinator and say, you know, who are they going to focus on? What do they feel like is going to be a significant mismatch for them? Because you know that with 2 weeks to prepare, theoretically speaking, the opposition should take away your best player as much as they possibly can. Then you mix right. in the Nick Foles thing that we already talked about, where you really don't know quite what you're going to get from him. I mean, he has played well in the two playoff games. Statistically, he's played better than the eye test showed, if you consider the first game. Then this past game, he was very, very good against Minnesota. If you go 10 of 14 against a historically good third down defense, that's really, really remarkable. So what is the approach for you in terms of trying to organize your prop thoughts and look for some of the edges that are out there?
Yeah, I mean, I try to take a numbers-based approach just to get a baseline. Obviously, you mentioned all the adjustments that you want to do. But if you're looking at receptions, you know, a baseline is, you know, how many receptions per game that player has caught. I mean, I think you can get a good baseline for what Gronk is going to do. You can look at some of the analysis. And then above and beyond that, you want to look at analysis that, you know, other people do. The DFS people know a lot about how a defense defends a tight end. I talked to Evan Silva about that on my podcast last week. And, you know, he knew that just how these defenses, you know, defend tight ends and how they defend running backs. And, yeah, you just want to combine that all together. And but, of course, you know, I mean, it's definitely one of those things where you want to put your knowledge of watching games in as well, because that's really important.
And it's something that I've had success with in terms of sort of isolating that wide receiver three or wide receiver four type guy that, you know, a team winds up using, especially when you've got a guy as cerebral as Tom Brady, you know, or you think about if a guy like Drew Brees would have been in this situation. You know, you've got these guys that can go through their progressions, trust all the guys that are out there, and, you know, they're not going to have to rely on that number one wide receiver and force feed him the ball with 14 or 15 targets. You know, it's nice to have a situation like that. And you kind of have that with Philadelphia where, you know, Foles doesn't have a number one guy because he hasn't really played enough to have one. You know, Ertz probably is
right.
that guy for him. But, you know, he's sure. got a lot of skill position talent he can spread it around to. So, you know, I think this is a really complex Super Bowl, and all of them should be, because there's so much scrutiny and so much of a spotlight for these games. But especially when you consider the situations for these two teams, when you consider that New England, you know, kind of struggled with Jacksonville and Philadelphia's defense, while it wasn't the best in the league like Jacksonville's was, Philadelphia's is pretty damn good too, and they've got 2 weeks to prepare for this game. So, you know, it's just fascinating to look at the overall catalog of everything that's out there. And, you know, Ed, is it almost too much for you? You know, because you're compiling so much data, you're trying to find all of those edges that are out there. Does it become a little bit too overwhelming?
I mean, yeah, I think it certainly can, especially when you do have this 2 weeks. I feel like, I mean, Adam, you know what it's like to be working in this industry, and I feel like with a week to prepare for a set of games, it seems really quick. And then now we get to the playoffs, and we got one game over 2 weeks, and yeah, you can. I think you can definitely overthink things. You know, I just try to stick to basics. I mean, you talked about the Philly pass defense. I have them fifth in my adjusted yards per attempt. This is a really good unit, relatively healthy. And, you know, Brady did better against an even better unit in Jacksonville last week. But I think Philadelphia's going to put up some resistance. You know, Brady's hand looked pretty good. So in that game, it didn't look like he was had any issues with that. So I see a really good matchup on that side of the ball.
Last thing I want to ask you about with the Super Bowl, then we'll transition over to college hoops to finish things up here. And I posed this question to Brian Blessing, and I'm going to pose it to all the handicappers and sports personalities that I have here on the show. This game is indoors. It is up in Minneapolis, and I'm sure it'll be cold for all the fans that are walking around and the players that are walking around and all that. But it is inside, so weather will not be a factor. In your mind, Ed, does that benefit one side more than another, or does that just benefit everybody as a whole?
Yeah, you know, I kind of think it benefits everyone as a whole. I mean, you're indoors, essentially room temperature. You know, it's a lot of like going south for a bowl game, and everyone in the Midwest is going to complain about how, you know, these Big Ten teams have to go out to the Rose Bowl and it's not a disadvantage. I don't know. I don't believe in any of that stuff. I think it's a pretty neutral site. And I really like it too, because I don't have to make any wind adjustments for my totals prediction. So yeah, I don't know if it faces, I mean, you know, maybe if you had a dome team like in Atlanta playing New England, that's an outdoor cold weather type team, maybe that would affect it. But I mean, these two teams play in outdoor stadiums. They play on the Eastern Seaboard reasonably close to each other. So yeah, I think it's a wash playing in a dome in Minneapolis.
All right, let's transition over to college basketball here for a few minutes, which is something that a lot of people are going to be doing now with the NFL wrapping up. And we've got technically two games. I'm going to put an asterisk next to that because I don't think anything in the Pro Bowl coming up this weekend. So we've got the Super Bowl, and then the next big thing is March Madness. So you're going to have a lot of people sort of transitioning over to the college basketball side of things. And, Ed, we have a lot of data points on these teams already. So for those that are just now getting a head start in college basketball, they're certainly behind quite a bit. As far as what we talked about last week, we talked about some teams in terms of looking to, you know, establish some futures value on them, some teams that, you know, we kind of looked at in terms of having a good chance to, you know, make some noise in the month of March. And yet, once again, you look back at last weekend, or you look back 2 weekends ago, last weekend, even last night, you know, top 10, top 15, top 20 teams just continue to show that we just really don't have that many elite teams this year.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. We talked about futures a week ago, and we talked about I mentioned that some years you have five teams that can win the NCAA tournament. I think this year it's going to be closer to 10. I think it makes it just more that much more exciting in terms of watching the game. I think it's that much more exciting in terms of winning NCAA pools. I don't know if it affects, you know, betting spreads or totals, but for, you know, definitely the common fan, it's definitely a good thing.
I think it's really frustrating on a game-by-game basis. And, you know, I think one of the hardest things, and I tell our listeners this all the time, is that when you're handicapping a game, my goal, both with what we talk about on this show and also within my personal handicapping or the stuff I write over at bangthebook.com, is I try to limit variance as much as possible, because you're never going to take all of it out of the equation. You just try to get in your mind how you expect this game to go. You try to account for a lot of the angles that are out there. And right now in college basketball, I mean, it just feels like, you know, with the frequency of ranked teams going down, it's just a really high variance environment right now. And, you know, I think that's something that can get a lot of people in trouble as they make that transition over to college hoops, not knowing a whole lot, you know, about what we've seen so far and what the current, you know, the current landscape is in the market.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And it's been, you know, more over the last 2 weeks that we've seen those upsets. You know, I don't really think that should affect your handicapping at all. I mean, if you're betting these games, you kind of have your take on these teams, and don't let one game kind of talk you out of what you thought about this team. You know, for example, Michigan just looked awful against Nebraska last week. Just played their worst game. Probably fluke. Came back just fine against Rutgers on Sunday. Did what they had to do. I still think it's an interesting team. We don't know exactly how good this team is, but don't let one game or a couple of upsets just affect your process. Does that make sense, Adam?
Yeah, well, that's been the hard part for me. I mean, I'm a big-time baseball guy. I'm a big believer in sabermetrics, as I mentioned on the show here, and I'll be doing a lot of sabermetric analysis on the show, you know, once we get into spring training and all that type of thing. But when you look at baseball, a lot of it is predicated on larger sample sizes. And really a lot of data, statistical analysis, is predicated on larger sample sizes. And I've had that problem in the NBA, the NHL, and also college basketball this year, where, you know, the long-term sample sizes, you know, that you have a certain expectation, but the variance levels are just so high. I mean, I'm finding at the NBA and the NHL much, much streakier than I ever thought about. College basketball, you know, there's just not a ton of consistency here this year. So it's been really tough on me to look at things from a statistical standpoint, just because, you know, it's almost kind of laughing in the face of everything that I've believed about, you know, statistical handicapping and statistical analysis.
Yeah, no, and I completely agree with you. And maybe we can talk about a particular game to kind of show maybe my perspective on it. Kansas is at Oklahoma tonight. I do team rankings and they take margin of victory in games and adjust for strength of schedule. And so that's your typical kind of analytics-based handicapping, right? Oklahoma is predicted to win by 3. But when I do my best predictions, like, that's not the only thing I use. I use the market-based data as well, And I even used some data from the preseason polls. It turns out that the preseason polls is a great wisdom of crowds estimator of college basketball team strength. Predicts some, I think, 71, 72% of tournament game winners. So that's all the way at the end of the season. And I actually use that as well. And when I put everything together, I actually get that Oklahoma should win tonight by about one, which is right where the markets are, which is a little bit off from where kind of, the numbers-based handicapping would say, Oklahoma's been a better team this year. And I think that what it tells you is that Kansas has probably underperformed a little bit this year, and we can expect them maybe going forward. They have more talent than what they've shown in the numbers. And that's what makes numbers-based handicapping hard, especially, college basketball is definitely hard. Even with the 20 games that we have now, it is really, really hard with college football. So I hope maybe that gives you some perspective on, just kind of the numbers-based thing. Don't necessarily throw it out, but just kind of take it with a grain of salt. It's definitely one thing that you should use, and I'm, I'm a numbers guy, and I fully believe in it too. But when I do my full analysis, there's other factors that come in, and you can kind of see that. It's been really fun to look at some of these numbers today and just see that the full ensemble, so the group of predictors that I use, is much closer to the markets, and I think much closer to what's actually going to happen tonight.
Maybe this just has something to do with the fact of, the manner in which I follow all these leagues, all these teams, that type of thing, from doing the show and making sure that I have a wide knowledge base. But it's something that I've kind of noticed over the last few years. And it was something where last year I did not have a good baseball season because a lot of the things that I've traditionally done just didn't work out. And I didn't adapt quickly enough. I was handicapping starting pitchers too much when they were having so much less of an impact on individual games. So you're constantly adapting. You're constantly evolving. In college athletics, I sort of attribute it to the talent pool being a little bit more spread out, with all the social media and technology and all the things that are out there nowadays. Kids are playing in different places than they used to play. You used to have these big college recruiting powerhouses, and now you're going to get some 4- and 5-star kids that go play at FAU or go play at, Wake Forest or North Carolina State instead of going to play in the SEC. So, it's been really hard for me in terms of finding that good balance of, I like the numbers-based approach. I like the quantifiable stuff. I like some things that can eliminate kind of those gray areas that look a little bit more black and white, but I've had to make a lot of adaptations and a lot of changes here to the way in which I handicap these leagues. Have you felt that you've had to put in, whether it's more controls or more considerations over the last 3-4 years?
Not necessarily more controls. Like I would definitely say that, I'm always trying to look at what my model doesn't capture. And I think that's really important whenever you're trying to use numbers. Numbers are a great baseline. Numbers do not capture everything in the same way that markets don't capture everything. And that's the reason we do this, right? Because there are inefficiencies. I think maybe I've been using kind of more of the subjective analysis of trying to figure out where my models is wrong as I've dug into it. I'm not sure that necessarily has to do with just the last 4 years, but more of kind of my evolution, looking at markets and betting on games and things like that. I think I have done that more. So I will continue to, because I think that's a really important part of making predictions and knowing where your model is wrong and then making the proper adjustments. And I think when you look at sports bettors, like I've talked to a lot of people in a lot of fields, and the one thing I love about this industry is that people change. People are willing to improve and get better. And I think that's really the goal of life, really, in every area, right? Change, get better, improve. And I think when you do something like bet on sports games, you are forced to do that. And I think that's a good thing.
Let me ask you about a game here tonight, and we'll sort of try to illustrate some more of these handicapping type concepts with the numbers. And that's game 525-526. Clemson takes on Virginia. Big one here in the ACC. Virginia opened a 9-point favorite. We're up to 9.5, pretty much market wide. Big injury for Clemson here with Dante Grantham going down. Torn ACL. He's done for the year. He was their second leading scorer. So, this is a really unique situation because you'll have the situational handicappers saying, well, you're playing Virginia, you're going to have a very limited number of possessions. One of your best offensive players is gone. It's going to be really hard for you. You're going to have other situational handicappers saying Dante Grantham's out. First, real legitimate test without him. Everybody else is going to step up. Clemson's going to be highly motivated. they're a team you want to back tonight. So you have, you know, two very different schools of thought, and then there's trying to figure out how much does the loss of Dante Grantham actually mean to Clemson? Would this number have been 8? Would this number have been 8.5? You try to quantify what his absence means. So walk us through that process for you here, Ed, on an individual game basis with a situation like this where Clemson plays, you know, a top defensive team missing its second leading scorer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you start out by saying, well, what would the markets have said if everyone would have been healthy in this game? And the way I do that is I take past closing point spreads, run it through my algorithms, adjust for strength of schedule, and then it spits out a number at me with home court and everything. And that number is 7.5. So my metrics would say the market should be at 7.5 if everyone were healthy. So that suggests that, you know, Grantham the 2-point adjustment. And that's how I start my analysis. You know, if you really want to do this right, you're going to know how, you know, who his backup is, how the shots get distributed, who's going to take more shots, whether that player is efficient, whether that player has the talent to keep that efficiency with a higher workload. So that's how I would approach something like that.
And I think what's interesting, too, is you also have to factor in that this game has a total of 119.5. It opened 118.5, went down to 117. Now it's gone back up. So in that respect, too, again, limited number of possessions, lower scoring game. Then you have to determine what Grantham means in a spot like that with a low total, as opposed to if this was your run-of-the-mill game with a total of, you know, 138 or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely, because Virginia's going to walk the ball up the court. They're going to play stingy defense. That's what Tony Bennett does. And, yeah, I mean, I think that's a tough one. I efficiencies and pace don't really correlate that well in college basketball. So maybe you can use that to say, okay, well, we expect most of the things to be the same, you know, for that Clemson offense. But, you know, things can really change when you're missing a key player.
Let me ask you about one more handicapping scenario here, and then I'll let you go for today. Game 551-552, Duke takes on Wake Forest. Duke opened a 9.5-point favorite. They're up to a 10-point favorite now. But this is kind of your quintessential look-ahead type of spot. They just blew out Pitt, had no issues with the Panthers over the weekend after a nice road win in Miami. They play Virginia coming up here on Saturday. They'll host them at Cameron Indoor. So you have this spot here where you would expect that there's a chance that Duke comes out, doesn't play particularly well with this look ahead, but also you can put yourself in a really dangerous position if you incorporate that too much into your handicap and then, you know, wind up with a number that's really not indicative of where it should be. So what do you do in terms of situations like that? Do you really factor that in at all? Is it one of those things where, you know, maybe you need the overlay to be a little bit higher to play the game? How do you approach those, you know, look ahead, let down types of situations?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think in this situation, I'm not too particularly concerned about Virginia on Saturday. You know, my best number for this game is about 9.3. That's, again, you know, with the numbers and then with a little bit of the preseason expectations and what we think this talent's at, I think that number is about right. I think it would be a little different if they were playing North Carolina on a Thursday, if that makes sense. I think Virginia's a big game, but I don't think it's anything like – huge rivalry like another game would be. So I would actually kind of de-emphasize the situational angle in that game.
All right, well, so that's an interesting thing to me because, you know, is it fair to say that, you know, you only incorporate it when you really think it's relevant as opposed to, you know, kind of throwing it in there almost just to be safe rather than sorry?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I tend to so me personally, like, I mean, if I saw a bunch of data that on these types of letdown games, I'd probably be more likely to emphasize it, you know, without having seen that data. And if you just rely on me to use what I know about college basketball to figure out if this is a situation, I don't know. I guess I'm just not particularly excited about it because Coach K is kind of that, you know, he's the motivator, right? I mean, he's the guy that gets these guys up for every game. He's the guy that can get the team to obliterate a bad team by 45 and not let them slack off in this game. So just from college basketball knowledge, I just don't think it's just not a huge thing to me in this particular situation.
No. And that's interesting. And I mean, I don't know what the right answer is. I know what your answer is and I know what my thoughts are on it. And I know that there are some other people out there that really handicap these situations heavily, But that's one of the things I love here about this industry is that you can have people that have success in a variety of different ways. And truth be told, I don't know what the answer is. And not only that, I don't know how much it should be factored in. You know, if there is any kind of situation, is it worth a half a point? Is it worth a point? Does that really change, you know, the way that you're going to handicap or bet the game? I don't know. You know, that's something that I'm still trying to figure out, something that I'm still trying to, you know, come to terms with, because like I said, you know, what I like about baseball is that I've got the black and the white. I've got the numbers. I've got what the predictive value is of them. And that's what I go with. I don't feel as comfortable doing that in other sports. And, you know, sometimes being outside of that comfort zone can be a challenging thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you just pointed out what makes these betting markets so efficient. I mean, we all have our points of view about what's important about a game, whether it's a numbers guy, whether it's a situational bettor. And the reason the markets are usually pretty efficient is that the kind of the aggregation, the wisdom of that crowd is going to get that number right. And, yeah, I mean, I just think you just bring a good point of why, you know, these markets are pretty good, especially, and they're going to get better at college basketball over the next couple of weeks just because people know so much now.
No, that's true. And also it's going to be interesting to see, you know, some of that public money that we started off this little bit of the segment about, you know, because you've got people that are going to be betting college basketball just to bet it because it's out there because there's no football anymore.
Right.
And that's going to have to be accounted for in the marketplace as well. So, you know, we had Kyle Hunter on the show yesterday, talked about how underdogs have been very profitable in January and February in the past. So that may be something that our listeners want to keep an eye on here over the next few weeks. But Ed Feng from the Power Rank, what do you have going on over there right now, man?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've actually written a booklet about passing versus rushing in the NFL, and it kind of answers the question how New England could make the Super Bowl with the 31st worst rush defense in terms of yards allowed per carry. It answers the question, you know, why Adrian Peterson had to beg for a free agent contract this past season. Be happy to send you a copy if you sign up for my free email list, and you can learn more about that at thepowerrank.com. That's all one word. / booklet.
And you can also follow Ed on Twitter at the Power Rank, no spaces, no underscores, anything like that. Ed, appreciate your time on today's show. Thank you so much for joining us, man. And hopefully we'll talk to you again real soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you so much for having me on.
Great stuff there on today's show with Ed Feng. Again, make sure you head on over to the Power Rank and follow him on Twitter at the Power Rank. Couple of great guests here today with Ed Feng and Brian Blessing. Good to chat with them here once again on this week of Bang the Book Radio. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of the show, we'll have Brian Leonard join us from WagerTalk.com. Also, we'll chat with Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. I'm sure we'll talk Super Bowl 52. Maybe we'll work in some Farmers Insurance Open out at Torrey Pines with Wes on tomorrow's show. Maybe we'll chat some NBA. We haven't done a whole lot of NBA here lately on the program. So we'll see what all we can fit in on Wednesday's show. Thursday, we'll have Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. After, we have Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. And then Friday, should have Lockie Lockerson on the show. We're going to chat some college basketball futures betting with him. Should have him on actually the next 2 weeks as we talk some Super Bowl 52 props. I don't know if that'll be Friday or if we'll do that next week. But we'll definitely get that show out to you. And then we'll also chat with Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.